From Feature Story News in Washington and our bureaus around the world, this is FSN Reports. I'm Kevin McAleese. On today's programme, ballot backlash. The US and EU slap Russian officials with sanctions after Crimea votes to break from Ukraine.
We'll continue to make clear to Russia that further provocations will achieve nothing except to further isolate Russia and diminish its place in the world.
Also today, the search mission for Malaysia Airlines Flight 370 continues to expand, with some 25 nations now involved. And we hear from the immigration reform advocates who say keep the pressure on the White House.
We know that the main solution and the only solution is to pass immigration reform, but we believe that the president has power to diminish that pain in our families.
That's coming up on FSN Reports after our latest summary of the day's headlines.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Rebecca Hume. Russian President Vladimir Putin has reportedly signed a decree which recognizes Crimea as a sovereign and independent state, taking effect straight away. Earlier, the United States and European Union imposed sanctions on a number of officials from Russia and Ukraine over the vote. Both set out their lists of who would come under asset freezes and travel bans. Latest developments follow what the international community calls an illegal referendum in Crimea, where voters overwhelmingly chose to join the Russian Federation. The European Union has imposed a total of 21 sanctions across the region. The UK Foreign Secretary William Hague says the European Union is not afraid to impose more sanctions if the situation doesn't improve.
It's not a list that is set in stone for the future. It is possible to add other figures in the future, depending on how Russia reacts to the referendum in Crimea, which has been a mockery of any real democracy.
In a White House address, US President Barack Obama said there would be consequences for Russia's actions, and the US would calibrate their response according to whether Russia chose to de-escalate the situation in Ukraine. Mr. Obama described the steps the government was taking in order to impose the sanctions.
As an initial step, I'm authorizing sanctions on Russian officials, entities operating in the arms sector in Russia, and individuals who provide material support to senior officials of the Russian government. And if Russia continues to interfere in Ukraine, we stand ready to impose further sanctions. We're continuing our close consultations with our European partners, who today in Brussels moved ahead with their own sanctions against Russia.
So far, seven officials, including ousted Ukrainian President Viktor Yanukovych, are to receive US travel bans and asset freezes. Officials investigating the disappearance of Malaysia Airlines flight MH370 say background checks on all passengers are still being carried out as the search area now widens. Australia has taken control of the southern vector search for the plane, while more than 25 other countries are assisting in the area and in the northern corridor over South and Central Asia. Some experts believe the southern route towards the Indian Ocean is more likely to be where the plane flew, because going north would have taken it through numerous national airspaces. US President Barack Obama has told Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas that tough choices are ahead and concessions must be made as the pair met for talks in Washington. The meeting comes several days after the White House hosted Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who repeated his demand that the Palestinians recognize Israel as a Jewish state. From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN. As Afghanistan prepares for historic elections next month, the United Nations has urged Afghans not to be bullied out of casting their vote. The country is due to hold presidential and provincial elections on April the 5th, the first democratic transition for the country after 12 years of international assistance. But the Taliban has threatened a campaign of attacks against electoral officials. Head of the UN mission in Afghanistan, Jan Kubis, said voters should not be put off by threats of violence.
Elections are a defining moment that will earn President Hamid Karzai a place in history. I urge all eligible Afghan citizens, men and women, to exercise their franchise on the 5th of April. Do not let spoilers and terrorists deprive you of your choice of your future.
American commandos have taken over a commercial oil tanker which was being used by anti-government forces in Libya. The Pentagon has confirmed that the vessel was boarded in international waters off the coast of Cyprus. Libyan rebels had loaded the vessel with oil in an effort to make money from exports, despite opposition from the weak central government in Tripoli. Malcolm Brown reports on the US military operation to seize the ship.
President Obama himself gave the go-ahead for the mission to take control of the oil tanker Morning Glory. In a statement, the Pentagon said that a team of elite U.S. Navy SEALs boarded the ship at the request of the Libyan and Cypriot governments. The U.S. military says the tanker will be sent back to Libya with a team of U.S. sailors on board. The effort by Libyan rebels to access the world oil market is just the latest challenge to the Libyan government, which is struggling to impose its authority over the country. Malcolm Brown, Washington.
And that's the latest Feature Story News, Rebecca Hume reporting.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Kevin McAleese. Welcome to FSN Reports.
We'll continue to make clear to Russia that further provocations will achieve nothing except to further isolate Russia and diminish its place in the world. The international community will continue to stand together to oppose any violations of Ukrainian sovereignty and territorial integrity. And continued Russian military intervention in Ukraine will only deepen Russia's diplomatic isolation.
President Obama's reaction Monday to Crimea's Kremlin-backed referendum to join Russia, which won overwhelming support in this weekend's vote. Earlier, Vladimir Putin signed a decree recognizing Crimea as a sovereign and independent state. Mr. Obama wasted little time signing an executive order for US sanctions against several Russian officials involved in a ballot Washington, Kiev and their allies branded unconstitutional and illegal. The EU has also targeted senior Putin aides with travel bans and asset freezes. FSN Reports has reaction from Moscow, Brussels and the US, but I began by talking to our correspondent Tom Barton in Crimea.
The figures coming in from local officials here show about 97% of people who cast their ballots across the Crimean Peninsula have voted for Crimea to secede from Ukraine and to join Russia, to become part of the Russian Federation. Although that sounds an astonishing result for a referendum, there are certain factors that played a big part in that. The first of all is the fact that there is a genuine, a large ethnic Russian population here, about 60% of the population of Crimea, and a lot of those have genuine warmth and respect for Russia and would happily, given the choices on the ballot paper as they showed, move towards Russia. And so when they were presented with those choices, it didn't seem particularly difficult for them to choose that. They are also worried about what they see as the growth of far-right groups in Kiev, something which Moscow has been pushing as a problem as well, but which is totally rejected by Kiev and Western governments, who say that that is absolute lies, that the government in Kiev is not a fascist government. The second thing is the ballot papers themselves. The first option is to leave Ukraine and to join Russia. The second option is to revert to the 1992 constitution of Crimea, which basically means virtual autonomy, virtual independence. There is such a high level of autonomy in it. That is it. There is no third option to try and keep the status quo as it is. And that is part of the reason, as well as what is seen as the illegitimacy of the vote by Kiev, that Crimean Tatars, making up about 12% of the population, pretty much most of them, the vast majority of them, boycotted the vote. They think it is an illegal vote, and they also, for their own part, think that the vote was a stitch-up with no real choice at all, as did some of the ethnic Ukrainians here, who have in previous weeks been waving Ukrainian flags and showing that there are people here with different views, that it is not only that all of Crimea wants to join with Russia. So serious differences in opinion there that have contributed to tensions as well. But the enormous street party of Russians that was thrown around the town of Simferopol and Sevastopol and elsewhere here as well, with free Russian flags given out, music played and drinking until the small hours of the morning, showed that those pro-Russians were very happy with the result of that referendum.
Can you explain what changes, if any, have already come about in Crimea that suggests this transition into the Russian Federation?
As for those specific things like the ruble, signage, etc., those things will most probably come in time if there is the will to push them through. There is still a lot of Ukrainian functionally used here in the streets, on banks, products, labels, spoken actually as well around the streets as well. There is far more Ukrainian here than there might seem at first glance. As far as the formal process goes, we've heard on the ground from local pro-Russian politicians that they hope within a week, officially, Crimea should become part of the Russian Federation. But for bringing in all the paraphernalia of state in all of its different manifestations, I suppose that could take a bit longer. And the international diplomacy going on around the world could have an effect to try and limit that, or perhaps even roll it back.
FSN's Tom Barton. As Crimea prepares to officially enter the Russian Federation, President Vladimir Putin is expected to address Parliament Tuesday on the secession of Crimea. For more on the Russian response to the referendum and those US and EU sanctions, I spoke to our Moscow correspondent, Anya Ardaeva.
Reaction from Moscow to the sanctions has been limited so far. Tomorrow, Russian President Vladimir Putin is expected to address the parliament in Moscow, and hopefully we will hear more about what the Kremlin actually thinks about the sanctions. Earlier, Kremlin officials threatened sanctions in response, and they did not specify what those sanctions might be. But everyone here is wondering why the country's top leadership, including Vladimir Putin, the country's president, and Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev, were not on that list. The list that Washington came up with included 11 Russians, including Vladislav Surkov and Sergei Glazyev, who are two aides to Russian President Vladimir Putin. It also included Russian Deputy Prime Minister Dmitry Rogozin, who already said that the measures would not affect those who don't have assets abroad. And that statement echoed a statement from a lawmaker, Yelena Mizulina, who was also on that list. Her involvement in the Russian-Ukrainian crisis is not known, but she is an author of a controversial bill which banned gay propaganda among minors. That bill was introduced last year. She also said she did not have any assets abroad and that the sanctions aren't likely to change her life that much. So yes, again, the question that everyone is asking is why the people who actually orchestrated the referendum in Crimea and who requested for the parliament to pass the legislature authorizing use of force there are not on the list.
And Anya, we know that there were some protests over that referendum in Crimea held staged in Moscow over the weekend. Can you give us a sense of how people have reacted to the decision for the Crimean Peninsula to be absorbed by the Russian Federation?
This is a very complicated matter for many Russians because Crimea is viewed by the majority here as traditionally Russian turf, as a traditionally Russian territory. Crimea has been part of Russia for centuries, since the 17th century to the 20th century, when Soviet leader Nikita Khrushchev, who is half Ukrainian, when he came to power in 1954, he gave Crimea to Ukraine, and many people considered this as a mistake. At the same time, 73% of Russians said they were not willing to launch a war over Crimea and that they did not think that Crimea should be part of Russia by force. So the opinion here is certainly mixed. While some people support the referendum and say that this is a good thing that so many people came to the polling stations and expressed their desire to be with Russia, others say that there was really no need for that, and that Ukraine is also Russia's brotherly nation and that its sovereignty needs to remain in place.
Anya Ardaeva in Moscow. For more on the US response to Russia's actions in Crimea and the broader Ukrainian crisis, FSN's Lorna Shaddick spoke to Stephen Blank, senior fellow at the American Foreign Policy Council in Washington, D.C.
I think that the only way you get Moscow's attention is to really impose sanctions that hit and hard, and that they be aligned with political and military moves that of a non-belligerent nature, but that convey resolve and force and willingness to prevent things like this from going on, and even in this case, to put it under pressure to roll it back if necessary, because what we have here is an act of war.
When you say more political and more military moves, can you expand on that a bit? What measures do you think the U.S. should take?
Well, it is essential, one, that I think NATO have more exercises on the Partnership for Peace with Ukraine. I think it is also necessary to put more troops on a permanent basis into Poland and the Baltic states and perhaps Romania, and also that NATO have a permanent maritime deployment in the Black Sea, if possible. I would also bring about political steps. For example, I would put Ukraine on the membership action plan for NATO, Georgia as well. I would offer Ukraine the money it needs to get out of the immediate crisis that it's in, but also to make it clear to them that if they do undertake the serious reforms that need to be accomplished in Ukraine, that they are on a track for membership in the European Union. But they have to do the reforms, European Union will help. I would also impose much tougher sanctions on the Russian government and Russian economy than has been the case now, and sanctions that would really hurt. And I think we have to do that in order to demonstrate that European security is indivisible and to make it clear to Putin and to other governments that would try to strike at Western interests that if they do so, they pay a cost that is disproportionate.
But the Obama administration would contend that these sanctions against Putin's aides will be painful and effective.
Well, they would say that. Those don't hurt anybody except those individuals. What's necessary is, first of all, those individuals are not the important ones. If you want to strike at individuals, there are much more important ones to strike at. Sergei Glazyev, for example, is not, well, Valentina Matvienko are not major players. You strike at Putin's own $40 to $60 billion that's in Swiss banks, and Igor Sechin and Sergei Ivanov and people like that. That's a message they'd understand. You strike at Rosneft and at Gazprom. I think those are the kinds of sanctions. And you can do what President Eisenhower did to the UK in 1956. We essentially organize a run on the pound, organize a run on the ruble, and that would make itself very quickly felt in Moscow, I think.
So why then do you think that the Obama administration isn't taking the direction that you're suggesting?
Well, first of all, I don't think it has the nerve to do it. I don't think it sees unity in Europe as a second thing. And the Europeans are clearly not willing to do anything on a united basis except at a lowest common denominator. Third, they are sensitive to the fact that there's a great deal of, or believe that there's war weariness here, and that they can't get public support, which I think is a mistaken belief. And fourth, they think they need Russia to achieve key objectives such as the negotiations with Iran and Afghanistan. I think on all four grounds they're wrong, but I think that explains their belief.
Now, President Obama earlier this morning talked about how these sanctions can be ramped up and escalated if necessary. Is that a sign, do you think, that the U.S. is expecting the situation to escalate?
Well, what provocation could be greater than invasion, occupation, and annexation of a foreign country? Those are all acts of war under any legal system. What you've basically shown is that the treaties that we signed with Ukraine in the 90s and in the previous decade don't amount to anything, and that nobody in Europe is prepared to guarantee the security of these states. I don't think you need more provocation in order to impose sanctions that really hurt. I think that's a fundamental misnomer. I just think it's fundamentally wrong.
Stephen Blank, Senior Fellow at the American Foreign Policy Council in Washington. EU foreign ministers have also imposed sanctions on 21 Russian and Ukrainian officials following the referendum. The names on the list include members of the Russian Parliament and the Admiral of the Russian Black Sea Fleet. FSN's Jack Parrock has been following today's EU meetings in Brussels.
Asset freezes and travel bans from the EU for individuals deemed to have been a significant part of what's being called the annexation of Crimea. A tweet from Lithuanian Foreign Minister Linas Linkevicius was the first clue about the sanctions the European Union will impose while he was still sat in the meeting. Afterwards, Mr. Linkevicius said the list will penetrate as far as Moscow.
Officials from Ukraine, Crimea, also from Russia, members of Duma, also representatives of military, so to say, command, those who are behind or somehow related for this illegal actions which happened. So this is first package, I would say, open-ended list. If the situation will require, as we have said repeatedly, if the situation will not be de-escalate and especially will spread to the eastern and southern part of Ukraine, what we can see some symptoms, it must be stopped.
Some have said the EU measures have not been as tough as ones put together by the USA, announced by President Obama almost simultaneously. But British Foreign Secretary William Hague says there's plenty of scope to add more names.
This is not a list that is set in stone for the future. It is possible to add other figures in the future, depending on how Russia reacts to the referendum in Crimea, which has been a mockery of any real democracy, and how they are reacting to the possibility of discussions and direct negotiations with Ukraine over the coming days.
The heads of state of the 28 EU countries will meet here on Thursday, and further sanctions could then be imposed. If Russia continues to defy calls from the West to step down their military presence on what's considered Ukrainian territory by the EU, then much more serious measures like full-scale economic restrictions and arms embargoes could be an option. But many in Brussels think the European Council will be reticent to go that far yet. Jack Parrock, Brussels.
This is FSN Reports. The search mission for Malaysia Airlines Flight 370 continues to expand, with some 25 countries taking part in the mission to locate the passenger jet. Malaysian officials say the focus of the investigation has shifted toward the captain and crew of the airliner, which dropped off radar over a week ago with 239 people on board. For the latest developments, I spoke to Simon Denyer, China Bureau Chief for the Washington Post in Kuala Lumpur.
Well, it's bizarre, actually. I mean, Kevin, it shifted towards the pilots, and it definitely has shifted towards the pilots. We've got new details out today that have changed things again. The Malaysians have done another U-turn today. Over the weekend, they said that a key satellite communication system within the airplane was turned off before the pilots made final radio contact with air traffic control. And that suggested to everybody that the pilots were either in on it or perhaps had a gun to their head. But people really began to think, well, hang on, this has to be the pilots. Well, now they've reversed themselves, and they said they didn't know when that satellite communication system was turned off. It could have been after the pilots made that final, all right, good night signal at 1:19 p.m. So again, more confusion. It doesn't mean that the pilots do not remain among the key suspects here. I mean, clearly, somebody flew this plane who knew exactly what they were doing. Somebody turned off systems so the plane could avoid control, avoid detection. But it does make it less of a cut and dried case against the pilots than it was maybe 48 hours ago.
You're now in Kuala Lumpur following this story. Can you explain what the reaction has been to the investigation in terms of the way it's been handled by Malaysian officials there?
Well, I mean, look, the first thing is, I think everybody in the region, all the families, all the governments in the region are enormously frustrated. The FBI is frustrated, China's frustrated, Vietnam's frustrated, India's been frustrated, and the families especially have just been going through anguish. I mean, to be fair to the Malaysians to some degree, this is an unprecedented mystery, and they haven't got any experience of it at all. They're at the center of a global news story and a global mystery that nobody has ever thought could happen, you know? So they don't know how to handle it. And it's been shown over and over again that they don't know how to handle it, and it's been unfortunate. They've said things at press conferences which were not true. There were partial pieces of information, and they've allowed a lot of planes and a lot of ships to search areas of the ocean where perhaps they probably should have known the plane wasn't anywhere near that part of the ocean. I'm not sure how much cooperation they've had from other people. It may be that the information has flown, you know, hasn't come to them as quickly as it could have done, but it has been chaotic. The thing I would say, actually, the investigation's been chaotic, but the people who hijacked this plane, whether it was passengers or whether it was crew, that was not chaotic. That was meticulously planned. It was an extraordinarily well-planned operation. To evade detection for all of this time, clearly, whoever did this knew exactly what they were doing. And unfortunately, the Malaysian authorities haven't shown the same professionalism. But, you know, it's been hard. To be fair to them, it's been hard.
Simon Denyer, China Bureau Chief for The Washington Post. Now, the Congressional Hispanic Caucus is holding off on a planned vote to condemn the president's record deportations after a meeting at the White House where President Obama promised to review his administration's immigration enforcement rules. But many immigration reform advocate groups say both they and their representatives should be keeping the pressure on the White House until they see concrete policy changes. In Washington, Alice Olstein reports.
Last week, the president said there was nothing he could do under the law to stem the tide of deportations of undocumented immigrants. But after meeting Thursday with Latino Congress members and Friday with more than a dozen immigrants' rights activists, he said he would look into what he can do to enforce current laws more humanely. Gustavo Torres, with the organization Casa de Maryland, was part of that meeting at the White House and will be meeting with the Department of Homeland Security later this week. He says he will push for, among other measures, an executive order expanding the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA, program, which currently protects undocumented youth from deportation.
Extend DACA to the families and to the parents and people who have U.S. kids right here in our country. So just one example of what we can do and what the president, we believe that he can do, right? When we express that to the president, Mr. President, you know, a lot of those people that have been deported right now, they qualify even under the Senate bill. I mean, it doesn't make any sense for our nation and for the president to deport people who do not have any criminal record, people who are making an extraordinary contribution in this society.
After months of protests by immigrant communities and their allies across the country, the Congressional Hispanic Caucus was on the verge last week of passing a resolution opposing the president's record of increased border militarization and nearly 2 million deportations. But after meeting with the president, they decided to hold off on that vote until they see the results of the promised review of deportation policies.
The fact that they have not taken a position is deplorable, and they should be ashamed that they haven't stood with the people that they're in Washington, D.C. to represent.
That's Marissa Franco with the National Day Labor Organizing Network, one of the groups behind the nationwide Not One More deportation campaign. She said her organization is planning on staging protests in at least 25 states and D.C. next month, targeting members of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus and the president. On Friday, President Obama told Torres and other activists to stop calling out his record on deportations and instead refocus their attention on Congress, where immigration reform bills are currently stalled. In a statement after the meeting, the White House said the president continues to believe that the only permanent solution to fixing the broken immigration system is through meaningful and comprehensive legislation. But many advocates, including Franco, still want the president to act.
Asking this agency to do any level of internal adjustments or internal reform is clearly not enough. The pressure is not going to cease until the president takes bold, expansive action to stop deportation.
Groups have also focused over the past few weeks on pressuring Republicans to allow a vote on a comprehensive immigration reform bill. But the House of Representatives instead took up a bill this month that seeks to roll back some of the president's executive orders providing relief from deportation. On Thursday, the House of Representatives passed the Enforce Act, which empowers Congress to sue the president if they feel he has failed to fully enforce any federal law. President Obama has said he will veto the bill if it ever reaches his desk. In Washington, I'm Alice Olstein.
And that's Monday's edition of FSN Reports. You can contact us by emailing us reports@featurestory.com, and you can follow us on Twitter @FeatureStory. Coming up on Tuesday, find out what happened when a team of Ukrainians went head-to-head with a team of Russians on a New York soccer pitch. That's Tuesday, but for now I'm Kevin McAleese in Washington, alongside producer Simon Marks and Rebecca Hume on the Bulletin Desk. For everyone with Feature Story News everywhere, have a great evening. Goodbye.